My name is Beth, and I'm a member of the Ithaca Committee for Justice in Palestine, Jewish Voice for Peace. We work together. And within our organization, we have a campaign work group. We have several people here, if you want to raise your hands, who are in the priority campaign work group. And these are the folks who organized this teach-in today. We've chosen the Not on Our Dime campaign as our priority for this particular period. And so that's what brings us here today. So what is a teach-in? So a teach-in isn't just to educate, but it's to grow activist community and prepare and fortify ourselves as a community to take action. Those who lead teach-ins are not only speaking based on their knowledge, but also based on their commitment to working for justice. We decided, this is Ithaca CJP JVP, decided to prioritize the Not on Our Dime campaign at this horrific time. And we formed this teach-in because we hope you will join us. We know there are many people in this room, probably everyone, who has been involved with taking all different kinds of actions already in solidarity with Palestine. So if in the last year you have been taking some action in solidarity with Palestine, please raise your hand. Yeah. So you're among people who are active, maybe in different ways than you even know about at this point. All different kinds of action strategies are necessary for change. We are taking on a campaign at this particular time, which has certain aspects to it that are important. One is there's a focus on particular political targets to influence their position. Also, it's to build the kind of people power that we need to build to create fundamental change and the steps towards those fundamental changes. So it's working in a particular way of trying to bring more people into the movement. As you know, we're here at a very dire time. We're watching Israel and the United States government carry out a genocide against the people of Palestine. And I don't say that lightly. They're using very powerful bombs targeting entire communities and families, destroying the infrastructure of daily life, and deliberately forcing communities and families to keep moving constantly while they're facing a deliberate policy of starvation. In the West Bank, settlers and the Israeli government are rapidly stealing Palestinian land and expanding settlements. This month was the largest seizure of land in three decades. These horrors and more are unfolding before the eyes of the world in real time, and our government, along with Israel's, is a perpetrator. The Palestinian people have been courageously resisting this onslaught while trying to protect themselves and each other. Meanwhile, our national leaders continue to fail us. So we're part of this worldwide solidarity movement with the Palestinian people, from divestment movements on university campuses, ceasefire movements, many forms of direct action, including hunger strikes, litigation for human rights, all trying to stop this war machine as business and support the liberation of the Palestinian people. So as I said, we invited you to this teach-in because we want you and more people to join in to our campaign so that our state, New York State, will stop contributing to Israel's war crimes. While it may seem obvious that New York charities should not be funding genocide in Palestine, do you think that seems obvious? Unfortunately, this practice is rampant and growing. We're invited Jonathan Brenneman, a Palestinian American, Mennonite, a lot of identities, who has been part of the Not on Our Dime campaign planning statewide, to share with us the scope of the problem and how the Not on Our Dime campaign will help to mobilize people to make a significant difference. Jonathan also has first-hand experience in Palestine resisting settler violence in Hebron. After Jonathan speaks, there'll be an opportunity for questions and answers. I want to emphasize that, you know, the listening and the discussion are both important, equally important. Okay, so that's enough for introductory remarks. I'm going to turn it over to Jonathan. Let's give him a hand.
Thank you, Beth, and thank you all for coming today. As a Palestinian, it means a lot that you're here. It means a lot that so many of you raised your hands, that you have been taking action on our behalf in this devastating moment in our history as we are resisting annihilation. It was over 10 years ago, I stood the hot sun beating down on my back, seeing the cloud of dust along the way that a car trailed behind. I looked to my right and saw the cabinet that had been knocked over, the broken glass still on the ground, from the settler attack in Misafer Yatta. And I hoped, along with the people of that village, that that cloud of dust would keep going past us that day, that the settlers would not return to do more violence to the people in that village. Misafer Yatta is a small area in the southern West Bank, south of Hebron, where about 1,000 Palestinians live, that Israel has been trying to steal since 1967. The people there, some of the poorest farmers in Palestine, were determined to hold on to their land. And the settlers that surrounded them were determined to violently remove them. It would be years before I learned that those settlers were able to afford the trailers that they moved onto Palestinian land, were able to afford the drones they used because of charitable donations donated through organizations in the state of New York. It wasn't until one of my colleagues from Palestine, from my time in Palestine, was doing a tour to the U.S. and shared with me that they thought there might be a way of challenging, of diminishing the power of those settlers by not allowing those charitable funds to go to them. At that time, the hope was that maybe we could get the Attorney General of New York to go after these organizations. Others had tried in the past to get the IRS to actually enforce some of the charitable laws that the IRS is supposed to have on the books. But the IRS had no interest in doing it. It is a relatively small and underfunded agency, and we have almost no power to influence it. So that had gone nowhere. Some Palestinian Americans had tried in vain to sue some of these so-called charities. But unfortunately, those court cases had been stalled for years and years. So this new idea, recognizing that every charity is registered in a state and that the state has authority to oversee if they are following the laws, seemed like an opportunity. And a coalition of U.S.-based organizations was ready to take this on and make this into a major campaign. The first meeting I was invited to was held by was hosted by Center for Constitutional Rights, and some of the organizations there included the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, Jewish Voice for Peace, and particularly their New York chapter, Democratic Socialists of America, Adela Justice Project, and many other national and local organizations. We brainstormed ways that we could potentially try to use what seemed like such an obvious misuse of U.S. charitable law to try to stem the flow of funds to the most extreme Israeli settlers, many of whom were in the Masafer Yatta area. Around that time, this was 2020, there was also a lot of news in the U.S. about the neighborhoods of Sheikh Jarrah was starting to get more press. I see some people nodding their heads. And Silwan in Jerusalem, two ancient Palestinian neighborhoods that were being depopulated of their Palestinian population. And in the words of the Israeli government, Judaized, that only people of a particular religious ethnic background were going to be allowed to live in those neighborhoods. And it turned out that there too, the main organizations pushing for the removal of Palestinians were getting the vast majority of their funding, some up to 98% of their funding, from charities registered in New York State. And this coalition of organizations in the U.S. were responding to a call from Palestinians, both in the South Hebron Hills and in Jerusalem, saying, now we know where they're getting their money. Help us make it stop. I remember that brainstorming day, and we were like, well, maybe this, maybe that, maybe that. And someone said, there's a politician I want to reach out to. There might be a way that we can get some legislation. And we all thought it was a ridiculous idea that a politician in the state of New York would actually try to pass a bill. But we were so excited to learn that Zahran Mamdani, who's a member of DSA, was not only willing, but excited, and wanted to make this one of the key parts of his work to create a piece of legislation that would make it very clear that war crimes in the form of Israeli settlements are not charitable. They do not make the world a better place, which is the basic underlying idea of why charities get tax-deductible status or tax-free status, and that they should be stripped of that status. I remember the meetings where we were brainstorming the language and the number of lawyers who have actually worked on laws that did all of the background to make sure that we had a very tight and well-explained law that would work. And I remember in 2023 when we launched the Not On Our Dime bill and the Not On Our Dime campaign. It was not well received in Albany. Our small but powerful coalition had some incredible speakers for the launch. But one of the things I most remember is a reporter asking Mamdani why he would even bother with a bill that had so little chance. And when Assembly Member Mamdani shared that this was to start the conversation, it was going to be a long road, the reporter responded, I've never seen something with a longer road. In the days that followed, Mamdani received backlash from other members in Albany. People claimed that they would not support any bill that he brought in, because he dared to suggest that ethnic cleansing is not charitable. Yet the coalition found inspiration in this. This was the first time in the entire country that there was even an attempt to hold Israel accountable for Israeli settlements. And though the coalition recognized Israeli settlements are only a very small part of the many, many war crimes that Israel was doing, that it was a starting point, And that especially as Israel and Israel's supporters in the U.S. continue to normalize the ongoing Israeli settlement of Palestinian land, that this bill could push back on that normalization of colonization. And then, after October 7th, as the genocide in Gaza started, the coalition decided to take a pause on the campaign. Zahran Mamdani's office completely agreed with this idea. Over the next months, the people working in that coalition were doing a lot, as I'm sure all of you were as well. And it made a lot of sense to not be focused on the West Bank at a time when there was a genocide in Gaza. And the coalition really stepped up. Zahran Mamdani, as well as Senator Jabari Brisport, who was the co-sponsor in the Senate of the Not on Our Dime bill, both got arrested outside of Chuck Schumer's house. JVP New York shut down Grand Central Station and the Statue of Liberty. Center for Constitutional Rights supported South Africa's effort at the ICJ, as well as sued the Biden administration for its complicity in genocide on behalf of Palestinian Americans. So we were doing a lot, and the genocide continued. And as you all know, we all were in the streets. We were all demanding of our national officials. We all found ways to make demands of corporations. We made demands of our city councils to try to pass ceasefire resolutions. And people started wondering what they could do at the state level. And as the political seasons rolled around and it was time to re-up the Not on Our Dime bill, we decided to change the wording just a little bit so that it would not only encompass charitable funds to Israeli settlements in the West Bank, which are a war crime, but all war crimes that Israel was part of, including the war crime of genocide in Gaza. So no charitable funding, because we learned that organizations were giving money to the Israeli military and getting tax-free status. Another loophole that we realized with just a couple of changes in the wording of the law, we could also try to shut down, and the law would no longer be in some way pitting Gaza and the West Bank against each other, but recognizing the ways that Israeli colonization is impacting both. Recognizing the ways that the settlers in the South Hebron Hills are enacting the same ethnic cleansing that the military in Gaza is enacting. And this time, in 2024, when we relaunched, building upon the mass movement for Palestine that had been going on in the U.S., relaunched with a lot of power. Some of the most powerful unions in the state of New York were behind the bill at that point. On the launch day, instead of about a dozen of the core organizers being there for the press conference, nearly 400 people were on the million-dollar staircase, chanting Free Palestine in the halls of Albany. And over 250 people participated in the lobby day, and over 80 offices were visited. Mamdani reported that even representatives who had wanted nothing to do with the bill were incredibly impressed and were quite taken back that people actually cared about this. Apparently the folks in Albany have been that insulated from the will of the people. And that lobby day actually caused one other member to become a co-sponsor, bringing the full number up to, I believe, 12 co-sponsors at this point. Still a long road to go, but clearly there was much more momentum. Clearly this bill now has to be taken seriously. And at this point in the campaign, the push is not in Albany. The push is in all of our communities with our local elected officials to get them to recognize that this is an opportunity for them. There is a genocide happening right now. History will look back and people will be forced to ask, what did you do? This bill gives our representatives an opportunity to be on the right side of history. And so few of them are taking it. They can try to bring up points about, well, what does this mean with other, with what will this mean for particular charities, or is this actually in our jurisdiction? If they want to be on the right side of history, they can get behind the bill. And right now it's up to us to make that case stronger and stronger and stronger. So thank you for being here. Thank you for taking on this campaign, JVP. And I would love to take your questions. Another exciting thing from year one to year two. In year one, not even all of the DSA members ended up co-sponsoring the bill. Now all of the DSA members are on. And in the primary, multiple DSA members actually ran on, I will support the Not On Our Dime campaign. So it is gaining momentum in that way as well. And from kind of the insider talk, there's a lot of people who are like, well, if no one else in upstate's doing it, not doing it, I'm not doing it. And so if we can get a couple of the people who are on the fence, there could potentially be a bit of a cascade. The part of this that I didn't talk about is all of the money that is leaving the state because it's able to be tax-free. That could be going to programs of social uplift. One of the exciting things in the campaign right now is that we just got a research intern to really dig into the questions of how much money, what are the organizations. We just looked at the very obvious ones, and the top six organizations that are settler organizations that we know very clearly that are getting money, over $60 million of, like, the New York State has lost over $60 million of taxes going to those organizations to demolish Palestinian homes, to give drones to settlers, to bring lawsuits against Palestinian shepherds. This money is going to destruction that could be going to building here in New York. At this stage, it would be to organize towards your local elected official. And again, this isn't Congress. We're at the state level. So this is even tighter in, even closer, right? It can feel daunting. The U.S. actually has one of the least representative democracies at the federal level. Like, the number of people that Chuck Schumer, for example, represents is so huge. It feels so small to try and so hard to actually get to him. But for our local elected officials at the state level, our assembly people, our state senators, it feels a lot less daunting to me. These are people that we should be able to influence and we should be able to push. These are people who we see at the grocery store, as I have seen my senator at the grocery store in Syracuse sometimes. And we can start to push that way. Yes, calling, sending postcards, sending emails, and then getting organized so that it's not just you, but it's actually a concerted effort. And let your elected official know that their constituency wants them to support this, and their constituency will have their back if they support this, because that's what they fear, right, is that if they support Palestinians, they will lose support. That's what everyone in Albany is telling them. They're so far behind the times. They don't care about Palestinians. They care about getting reelected. Most of the charities that we looked at would not be ones that I think anyone in this room would support. Things like the Hebron Fund that funds the settlers that I was interacting with in the city of Hebron, who would every week take a tour through this Palestinian city with armed guards all around them, again, fully paid for by these charities, and explain how none of that land was actually Palestinians and Palestinians were just trying to steal it. So it would be a tour where about 20 tourists would be led by one of these extremist Israeli settlers, and they would go around to Palestinian homes and prove that they weren't actually Palestinian homes and try to build the case for eviction with other people. And it would completely shut down. Palestinians would all have to go into their homes. They'd all have to leave the street for fear of arrest. And sometimes those tours got violent towards Palestinians as well, or they would, like, vandalize shops along the way. And the Hebron Fund was the main funder of those tours, trying to get people from all over the world to move into Palestinian homes in Hebron. Or the One Israel Fund is one of the biggest ones. which donates to a variety of Israeli quote-unquote charities, many of which are in the West Bank, and some of which their stated purpose is to take over Palestinian land. Organizations like Regavim, who about a year ago, they pinned a post on Twitter where they had a before and after of a school and a playground, and then a demolished school and playground and just a mound of dirt. And they said, we did that. These are the kind of projects that the One Israel Fund is funding. And you can learn more about this on the Not On Our Dime website. We highlight two or three of those organizations. There's a whole range of emotions. There's a whole range of emotions. Every day, seeing the news, getting reports from friends and family. And I think one of the hardest things emotionally for me is the massive disconnect in how the general story, the story is told generally here as to what I know to be true, the way Palestinians are depicted here as to what I know to be true. And so organizing, telling the truth, coming to things like this, having these little glimmers of how we might be able to make a difference and stop it. How long have there been charities that have been funding? My understanding is since before 1948. I mean, I know of charities that have been doing that. I haven't looked into the specific charities that, we've had for how long, but yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, this is not a new occurrence. The U.S. government has always claim to greater or lesser extent that settlements are bad. I'll just put it that way. Right. Some have gone as far to say they're illegal under international law, which every international law expert agrees they're illegal. Others have said it's a hindrance to peace. Others have said it's not productive. Like, there's all these different ways that they've generally said we'd rather not have settlements. Yet, U.S. policy continues to give billions of dollars to Israel as they're constructing more settlements. Something that I didn't talk about is all of these anti-BDS bills that have come up, almost all of them also have this secondary agenda of tying settlements to being part of Israel, right? Which the U.S. officially says, no, the two-state solution, the settlements don't count, and they're all going to be demolished or something. But these anti-BDS laws, what they say is you cannot boycott Israel or any land that Israel controls because that's also Israel. So there's this attempt to normalize the settlements, to allow Israel's further colonization to be legitimized. And so that's another way that this bill is pushing back. We also, in writing the bill, tried to do it so that it didn't further legitimize the land that Israel had stolen before 1967. And yet was focused very narrowly on settlements because legally that is where there was the strongest case, and recognizing this bill is a first step. It's the first in the country. Actually, there's a second now. Maryland has a Not On Our Dime bill. Same name, same purpose, slightly different language, but they saw what was happening in New York, and there was a group that wanted to replicate it, and representatives that were willing to bring that up. So it's this strategy is already spreading. Yeah, so when the bill first came out, as you rightly said, Beth, all of the original sponsors and co-sponsors were all people of color. And because of the strong backlash against them, the next level of the campaign was showing support to everyone who had come out in favor of the bill, to show them that even while the other representatives in Albany were like, this thing's horrible, the vast majority of people in their district, the vast majority of people in the state of New York actually agreed with it and had their back. And it's not okay to just be like, yeah, we agree. You actually have to show it. You have to go out there. So there has been a lot of canvassing in Brooklyn, in Queens, in other areas of New York City, door-to-door canvassing, as well as going to large public events, especially at some of the big mosques in New York City, to build support. The website has a take action tool where you directly write letters to your representative. There have been multiple postcard campaigns, and you all made some postcards here, right? Yeah. That was so, everyone in the coalition was like, wow, we had these like little printed postcards. Y'all have been screen printing and making your own, which is really cool to send to your representatives. Yeah, so the canvassing and letter writing have been some of the main ways that we've been pushing representatives. A petition is a potential other way. Petition and letter writing are very similar tactics, right? But with one, you have everyone sending the same letter, the other, everyone signing the same letter. So yeah, whatever you think is most helpful for that. But like getting meetings with your representative and then following up on those meetings, this is why the lobby day was so big. And the first person who, as you said, Beth, like changed because of their constituents, it was within about 2 weeks of the lobby day that that person finally decided to co-sponsor the bill. There had been some pressure campaign before, and then when they were able to actually get a meeting with their staff and push them on that. I think that bird dogging, as people are back in their districts, wanting to tout the work that they've been doing, asking them why they haven't signed on to the Not On Our Dime campaign, reminding them. I mean, one of the things that was so frustrating in my visits on the lobby day was the representatives who were like, oh, we hadn't heard about this. Oh, we didn't know. No one's had a meeting about this. And we were like, we've been trying to schedule for 2 years. We've been writing letters. You all knew about this. Stop pretending. But that's the general posture. And so make it impossible for them to ignore this bill, I think, is going to be like very, very important. Yeah, I mean, this is a very clear tactic, because how do you justify starving a million people? Right? You have to make them into evil. All of them. And it builds off of stereotypes. There was very likely or very clearly some forms of sexual violence that happened on October 7th. But the story has to be mass rapes. The story has to be these barbaric acts, right? The story can't be about the sexual assault of Palestinian prisoners that has happened for years and has been underreported for years, right? That's the only way to try to sell a genocide. It doesn't seem to be working on the wide scale, right? Like, the vast majority of Americans recognize that a ceasefire is needed. The vast majority of Americans recognize that Israel is in the wrong. Though, on the it's working side, about half Americans don't know if more Israelis or Palestinians have been killed, right? And that's because of the way that this gets reported, clearly. So continuing to tell the truth, continuing to be clear, to not get sucked into back and forth arguments, but to share what we know is true. There's a genocide happening. There's a million children starving. This has to end. The initial bill was very narrowly targeting settler organizations that were in what's called the West Bank. So this is land that has been set aside for a potential Palestinian state that Israel has continued to colonize. In the Oslo Accord 1990s framework, that almost anyone who looks at this is like, that framework is dead because Israel's built so many of these settlements, but that is still the dominant framework in the U.S. So basically what this bill is saying to all of these politicians is, if you actually believe this, if you actually believe in the two-state solution that, oh, I just go back to this Chuck Schumer interview where someone from JVP was like pushing him on why he, on one of his horrible policies, and all he kept saying was two-state solution, two-state solution, two-state solution. He wouldn't say anything else. And yet, here's a bill that, if it were passed, would help bring about the two-state solution. Stop settlements that Chuck Schumer says are a problem. Nothing in that bill, technically, if Chuck Schumer were in line with what he actually says, he wouldn't find a problem with. Yet, he and all of the establishment Democrats have been very opposed to this bill. So it was intentionally designed to be kind of as soft as possible to show the hypocrisy of those who don't agree with it. And to be like the first crack in this ironclad U.S. unquestioned support for Israel. It didn't target anything within Israel. However, when the Israeli military started the latest stage of their genocide in Gaza, we said that is a war crime as well. That is not charitable. And recognizing that there were New York charities that were giving to the Israeli military to help them do that, that the bill also covers that. So war crimes by the Israeli military as well as war crimes in the West Bank. The first is that it targets Jewish charities, which is not true. Some of the biggest charities giving to Israel are Christian Zionist charities. This is something that I often hark on. We don't have as much information on those charities, partially because many of them are registered as churches, and so they don't have to say where their money's going. And also a lot of the Christian Zionist organizations are in other states. But just last week, we identified one, so I'm very excited for them to start getting named more centrally. So that's one of them. Another is that this is a national issue, not a state issue. The IRS should deal with it. That argument also doesn't hold water because states absolutely have the authority to, and the main authority, to govern charities. That's why all of the charities are registered in a state, not at the national level. Some of the same people who have argued that they don't support this bill because they think it's a federal thing also were very excited when the Attorney General went after the NRA for breaking charitable status laws, right? It's actually the exact same power that she used for that we are calling on the Attorney General to use for this. Another concern is that this could be used against broader charities. This was something that we thought about a lot in the way that the bill was written. And the bill does not give the Attorney General any new powers. The Attorney General could have gone after these charities long ago. They are clearly breaking the law. It just clarifies the law and directs the Attorney General to actually enforce the law. It says, breaking international law is breaking the law, and charities can't go to breaking the law. Basically, that's a very dumbed-down version of what it's saying. And then stipulates how the Attorney General can go about that, that those organizations should be stripped of their status, the amount they can be fined, that Palestinians who have been harmed by U.S. charities do have a civil lawsuit that they could file against those charities as well. So these are some of the technical things that the bill does in order to achieve that goal of not having tax-deductible charitable status for war crimes. I would just point back to what Beth said, that all of the assembly members and senators who have backed this have been people of color. They tend to understand oppression first, and they recognize that what's happening to Palestinians is wrong, and we're willing to put their name on it. And I think that's true of, you know, this is a very, 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 very small subsegment of the broader campaign that we have. So that's why things like the Lobby Day were so cool, where they could actually bring buses of people. We got funding to bring buses of people up to Albany, and we got to see the broader diversity of the movement. And that's something that I think we always have to do. And I think that I do agree with you that some segments of the Palestinian solidarity organizing have not done a good job of recognizing that Palestine is a victim of global colonization, and it's the same global colonization that affects people of color all over the world, disenfranchised people all over the world, including in the U.S., and showing up for shared struggle. And that's partially because, I'll also put it back on my community, I would love to see more Palestinians at the Black Lives Matter protests and more Palestinians up at Line 3. But I am seeing, when I'm at those different things, deep solidarity by the people there recognizing those connections. And I think that's something growing within Palestinian solidarity circles as well. Not to overgeneralize, because there's a lot of groups that are doing really amazing intersectional work that focus on Palestine. It's easy to be cynical and be like, well, they went from not liking it for this reason to not liking it for this reason, but likely the reason people are changing their language around it is because they're hedging their bets more, right? Like, they want to take a softer stance in case the winds continue to shift and they actually have to change. And it's going to be like, we've done the nice asks at this point. We've gotten the people who are going to be changed because of their heart. Now it's the, like, people who are going to be pushing. The question is my life going to be harder if I support this than if I don't. And the folks in Albany, and the folks in Albany have made it very clear that they're going to make people's life hard if they sign on to this. It's our job to make it clear that we're going to make their life even harder if they don't. The New York political calendar is weird. It is so weird. You have so little time to actually lobby them in Albany. I'm sure we'll do something else in Albany next session. And in the meantime, it's a lot easier for you all to gather here than to gather in Albany. And your representative is here right now. So when is the next, like, who's scheduling the meetings and who's training on bird dogging and who has Anna Kellis's calendar of events and is making sure we have 10 people at every event and that we're first in line if there's ever a Q&A. Like, it's those kind of things that show power even more than a lobby day. The lobby day was a great start, but not letting them rest on this issue, not letting them get away with not signing on to this. Like I said, let them know that their life is going to be harder not signing on to this than signing on to it. I feel like that's the place where we're at with a lot of these politicians.